What's Up New York, we bring you now Rise Up Radio on WBAI 99.5 FM. That was Nas with Rule, and earlier you heard the Asian Dupe Foundation's Color Line. No.
Yeah, that's the Asian Dub Foundation. That's right, that's right.
We are bringing you now a conversation Rise Up Radio's Kat Aaron and Nell Geiser, who's with us today, had with an activist from several coalitions working to hold New York City Police Department accountable.
This week, New York City announced a settlement with the family of Amadou Diallo, a Ghanaian immigrant who was killed by police officers in 1999. The city is giving Diallo's family $3 million, though they originally requested more than 10 times that much. Thousands of activists mobilized to demand justice in Diallo's case, and many see this settlement as too little too late. And there are many other cases that don't get as much attention as the infamous 41 shots that killed the unarmed Diallo. We're joined by representatives of three coalitions taking on the New York Police Department from different angles and with various strategies to discuss how New Yorkers are organizing to stop police violence. With us in the studio is Margaret Schaefer of the Interfaith Coalition for Neighborhood Police Partnerships, along with her co-chair Christian Covington. Also in studio is Frank Morales of the Campaign to Demilitarize the Police. And joining us on the phone is Juanita Nightingale of the Justice Coalition for Alberta Spruill and Osmani Zongo. Welcome to you all.
Nice to be here.
So I want to begin with you, Margaret Schaefer of the Interfaith Coalition, if you can talk about what your group has done to present alternatives to the current situation of policing in New York City and a community involvement-focused vision of policing here in the city.
For several years now, we have been working on drawing up a proposal of drawn from best practices across the country, but a proposal for New York City to make systemic changes in the way that police are recruited and trained and police procedures and so on. So we have finished that proposal and presented it to the mayor and to Raymond Kelly, the police commissioner, and we're working now to with various parts of the police department to work on this kind of systemic change.
And Christian Covington, also of the Interfaith Coalition, how have you found the police department and the city of New York in terms of responsiveness to concerns about how they have dealt with community and the allegations of police brutality and violence in especially communities of color?
Well, they are their attitude is that they feel that they are very responsive. But the problem is that their idea of responsiveness is to create solutions that satisfy themselves. They are not willing to work with the actual community together to develop solutions to what the community feels the problems are, which is kind of what our coalition is about. It's why it's termed a partnership for a specific reason, because we want to work with the police department to develop solutions that we have a role in developing these solutions. And their attitude is like, well, we meet with you and we come up with these solutions and this is what we're going to do. I don't think we, as far as specific police brutality, we kind of raise these global issues with them, which are all directed to curing the department of these problems that which police brutality is a symptom of all these problems, such as diversity, such as the way they hire people, et cetera, et cetera. So as far as that, we don't really put them on the spot on that particular issue. It's just these other issues that they have not been responding to.
Juanita Nightingale, who's on the phone with us from the Justice Coalition, can you address specifically the case of Ms. Alberta Spruill, who died after a no-knock raid by police officers? City officials say that Mayor Bloomberg's decision to offer a $1.6 million settlement to her family showed how seriously he took cases like this. That settlement was determined and issued in late October. What's your response to that, and how seriously the administration and the NYPD are taking cases like Ms. Spruill's?
Well, the case actually began May 16th of 2003 when they entered her apartment and threw the grenade, which caused her death and caused the outrage from the community and from the churches and the unions. And there were a lot of things that were spoken about at the funeral of Ms. Alberta Spruill that have not been fulfilled. And at this point, what we're looking to do is to get the mayor's office and other organizations that made promises to us to get them just to fulfill their own promises and to do the things that they were supposed to do. At this point, they really haven't done that.
Well, you have been organizing since the week after Ms. Spruill's death. Can you explain some of the ways that the Justice Coalition has so far tried to remedy that situation and what you're looking for in terms of justice in the Spruill and Zongo cases?
Well, we brought everyone together and we had a huge rally down at City Hall Park in June of last year and to address some of the concerns not only about Alberta Spruill and Mr. Zongo, but about the general pattern of how things are done in our community. That is why we're having the forum on the 15th of January, and it's the first of many community forums that are going to be held so that we can create some plan of action, you know, and be effective with the police and with our community and empowering our community to do things in a positive way that will cause progress in our community for all of us.
And we'll talk more about that forum in a little while. I want to bring into the conversation now Frank Morales from the campaign to demilitarize the police. Frank, can you talk about the focus of the campaign around the protests at the Republican National Convention coming up in August and September of this year, and what your take is on the criminalization of dissent, how police are responding to that, and also how it's related to these other issues of police accountability?
Yeah, the Bush gang is intent on global domination, and to that end, they're seeking means of repressing the dissent at home, because in order to carry on their war abroad, it requires a war at home. So part of the process of what we refer to as the militarization of the police, which has been going on for a number of years now with the formation of SWAT, various exceptions to the Posse Comitatus Act, which is the act which differentiates the military function from the police function, and so forth, has led to a process wherein dissent, most recently we saw in Miami, is met with the harshest of repression, violence, the use of so-called non-lethal weapons or, in actual fact, less lethal weapons, rubber bullets and various forms of gases and plastic bullets that caused real injury. There were 100 people hospitalized during the Miami anti-FTA protests recently. This process of the militarization of the police is tied to a strategy of counterinsurgency. It's tied to a strategy of attempting to repress dissent, those who disagree with the Bush agenda, as well as the various domestic agendas, preemptively. To attack protesters violently in order to intimidate them. A lot of young people were brutalized, tactical brutality. This is conscious brutality at these protests. But I think we also want to make the point. So our campaign is focused around demilitarizing the police, stripping the police of the hardware that they gather through so-called technology transfers from the military. Legalized under Clinton and Reno agreement with the DOD, Department of Defense, in 1994. We're concerned that to the extent that the police are trained as soldiers, when emergency service units think of themselves as the special operations units of local police departments, using flashbang grenades in the case of Mrs. Spruill, flashbang grenade is a standard special operations technique. Of course, when they use them, they intend to go in and kill you. These types of weapons have no place in law enforcement. the distinction between law enforcement and military operations is being blurred, if not completely obliterated. And that's why we're seeing, in the case of Mr. Diallo, we see a we ask, why are the police firing like this? Almost reflexively, well, in fact, the NYPD has a contract with a group called the Firearms Training Systems, which trains the NYPD through virtual simulation in quick shoot reflex. This very same outfit, Firearms Training System, also has a contract with the Marines. So the outfit that's training the Marines is training the NYPD. It's no wonder that we see the kind of reactions that we see. And in fact, when the officers were acquitted, even though the family has received this fund, although the NYPD is fond of saying they have deep pockets, so they really don't care. It's public money anyway. But when they were acquitted, if you remember that trial, they were acquitted specifically because they argued that their training led to their action. And the trainer, Firearms Training System, even has within the contract, the specifics of the contract with the NYPD, that their training allows for a liability claim in the case of excessive force, that you can use this training as a way to justify, you know, that it was the training that made me do it. This sounds far-fetched, but if you look at the particulars of that trial, that's how those officers were acquitted. So our campaign is looking at the ways in which the police have become militarized. When we talk about the police in communities as an occupying force, we literally mean that. So I don't want to take up more time with it, but there are processes since 9/11, the institutionalization of the Northern Command, which is a domestic military command whose primary function is to, quote, assist law enforcement. We're looking at the complete consolidation and symbiosis of the military and the police function within America, transfer technologies, the weapons, the tactics, the attitude. The attitude that these police have are attitude of as though these are enemy. These are enemy combatants in these communities. They're not according people the niceties of their democratic rights, let alone their rights to protest.
There's been a fair amount of media coverage of the use of military tactics by the police in places like Seattle or Miami when there have been large demonstrations. And the participants of those demonstrations shown in the media are often young and usually white. Certain communities, the campaign seems as if it's focused around the use of military repression against dissenters, but some communities in this city and country are dissenting by virtue of their existence, whether it's their race or their class. And you spoke about the training of the police, Christian Covington of the Interfaith Coalition for Neighborhood Police Partnerships. Can you talk about what you would like to see changed in the police training that's part of your program?
Well, getting back to the issue as far as working with the community, Frank brought up a lot of good points, and one of them was that the militarization, it creates its own logic so that they go ahead and use these stun grenades without having really a proper rationale for using it. And our concern is that, yes, we, people in the 25th precinct, people in the 28th precinct in Harlem, they're very interested in getting rid of drug dealers. But as far as training, as far as techniques, we all can work together to figure out ways to get this done without them resorting to these types of tactics, without these types of devices. And so that's the way we really would like to address it, that we can all come together and agree as to what are the best ways to go about this.
And Juanita Nightingale on the phone from the Justice Coalition for Sproul and Zongo, can you sort of continue along that line and talk about how you would like to see systemically the police department respond to your concerns around these specific cases and change the way that they're dealing with police abuse cases and more broadly how they train police officers?
Well, one of the best tools so far that we've been able to use at the Justice Coalition is making people aware of what's happening. Until the unfortunate death of Ms. Sproul, most of the community, I know myself, we were not aware that those things were being used, that those sort of flash grenades and that sort of thing was being used. So out of the process and the outrage of the community and the churches and the unions, to which Alberta belonged, came the Justice Coalition, and we set out 9 demands. We sat around and thought about the things that we wanted the most to present to the mayor's office, and they were presented to the council, to the city council at this point, and they're what we'll be working on Thursday night at the forum, and we'll also be collecting surveys that speak about your experiences with the police. We would like to know what people's experiences with the police have been, you know, and it doesn't matter whether it's discourtesy or real physical violence, emotional violence, you know, it doesn't matter. It could be even something good if that is the case, but we will be passing out surveys and collecting that information regarding a lot of the things that have happened to you, positive or negative, with the police, and we're looking to work more with the Interfaith Coalition. They've been the ones who actually have been able to help us get this moving at this point, getting the forums up and running, getting people aware of what's going on, and programs like this that allow us to go out on the air and to talk to people and let them hear what we have. The 9 demands are nothing extraordinary, and any community should be outraged and have the same, pretty much the same 9 demands if it were to happen in their community.
Can you tell us a few of those demands?
Sure. Eliminate the use of flash grenades, no rubber stamping of the no-knock search warrant by judges, criminal charges against those who were responsible for the Sproul and Zongo deaths, independent monitoring and auditing of police conduct, public safety committee hearings to determine the role of police in the death of Ms. Sproul and Mr. Zongo, and no use of race as a factor to stop and frisk, establishment of Mayor's Community Advisory Committee on Policing, permanent Office of Minority Recruitment, and the release of to the public of all relevant data for the last 10 years regarding the no-knock search warrants where executed, and the frequency of the flash grenade use.
Well, we'll give information for the contact of your groups and the forum at the end of the program, but let's also give out the logistics of that forum now. Margaret Schaefer of the Interfaith Coalition, if you could tell people where and when that event will be going on, and from your perspective, from the faith Interfaith Coalition, sort of what the goals are as well.
Well, it's next Thursday night, a week from tonight, at 6 o'clock, from 6 to 9, January 15th, in the lecture hall at the Convent Avenue Baptist Church, which is on 145th Street, 420 West 145th Street, and here. What we're hoping to do is to engage the community in establishing ways of working on those 9 demands. To make the demands is one thing, to get them going and get them into a process is another piece of work, and that's what we're hoping to start. It's very important that the community not wait until disaster strikes to get involved. I was very taken by what our colleague from the coalition or the campaign to demilitarize the police, because attitude is such a big part of it, and attitude is the problem with the police attitude, but there's also a problem with the community attitude if they just sit back and let things happen. So we want to involve the community.
Well, one way Mayor Bloomberg in his campaign characterized the impact of the community's attitude is that protest of police brutality or police conduct causes lower morale among police officers. That was part of his argument for a better relationship between community and police. And in your report and proposals to the city, you cited that and wanted to join with Mayor Bloomberg in improving that relationship. Can you talk about sort of that issue of the impact of protesting and mobilizing against police brutality and police conduct, and how it should happen in a way that is both collaborative but also critiquing the system and not compromising, if either of you want to respond.
That's really Christian's issue, so I think we should hear from him.
Well, I think in basically our approach is that we are always willing and able to work with the police department. In fact, we have to be able to work with them in order to actually get what we want implemented. But that we also have to be able, and part of our stance is that we are we have an agenda and we have a proposal, and that it is there for them to take into account and for them to recognize our interests and to figure out how they can bring our interests into the department. It's not so much that we would just like to have a meeting with the police department to express our concerns and then for them to nod their heads and walk away. So that you have to be able to, and our position is that you have to be able to take an oppositional stance to the police department, but at the same time still be able to work with them. And in order to work with them, you have to understand the issues on their terms and be able to work with them on their terms. And that's part of what this forum and what our coalition tries to do, is become educated enough on the issues from the police point of view so that we are able to meet with them on equal grounds and work on these issues.
Right. We also would hope that we could use some of the existing structures, but use them more effectively. There are programs like the Clergy Liaison Program, and every precinct has a community council, but they're not used very energetically. And part of what we would like to do is get into those structures and use them, because you have to work inside as well as outside. And if we don't have the people outside protesting, then all the work inside gets ignored, and vice versa.
Frank, I suspect that the Coalition to Demilitarize the Police may have a slightly different perspective on the reform of the police department.
Well, I mean, it's just not a single point of view. There are a number of differing perspectives on it. My feeling on that question is that we need to take the weapons and demilitarize the police as an institution in order to facilitate, you know, the kind of negotiating space so that organizations like the Interfaith Coalition and others have a shot at these reforms. We need to, you know, to get this weaponry off the table and so forth. But I wanted to make one point about the linkage between police brutality and the demilitarization of the police vis-a-vis dissent. The creation of SWAT grew out of, in the late 60s, grew out of the Watts uprising in California and other such uprisings in the urban centers around the country, which were, you know, in the so-called ghettos of urban centers around the country. So these were communities of color. And the powers that be saw fit, through the creation of the California Specialized Training Institute, Louis Giuffrida, and Army Combat Command, to form SWAT. The Pentagon created Operation Garden Plot, which was about suppressing dissent nationally. It's still in operation. Straight through to L.A. and Rodney King, this apparatus, this militarization of the police, had as its early targets black and Latino populations in the urban centers and people incarcerated. The use of so-called non-lethal weapons had its testing ground inside the prisons, as well as abroad, you know, against Palestinian and the Irish and so forth. The point I'm making now is that process, that methodology of repression, has become generalized and is now being utilized against white activists and others who are involved in protesting. So what we need to begin to think in terms of is bridging the whole question of pushing back the repression around dissent and dealing with the question of police brutality in communities as an anti-war issue, and begin to see the connections between the militarization of the police and these trigger-happy cops in the communities and their attitudes. When they're trained as special operations elite forces, they're going to act like that. So there's a bridge here, and we need to be aware of those connections.
Christian Covington of the Interfaith Coalition.
Right. I just wanted to clarify that Frank just said that we are working on reform, and we are not working on reform. We're working on fundamental change of the police department, because they have no way of involving the community in what they do. And they have no way, right now, there is no system for them to be accountable to the community. And to make that happen, that is fundamental change. And it's not just reform. And I know he was just using the word just kind of describe what we're doing, but I wanted to clarify
that.
I think
I was the one who used the word reform, right. So apologies for that.
No
definitely.
Problem.
It's clear we need some radical change of the situation.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's in disagreement on that. One of the big policing stories this week, too, was the issue of the police that have been imposed in our school system and the sort of schools as a way to acclimatize younger people to the constant police presence. One student from Far Rockaway High School was quoted as saying that they're turning his school into a precinct. And there have also been reports that it's taking students up to 3 hours to even get into their school building because they're being made to take off their shoes, pass through metal detectors. Do any of you want to comment on this and the impact that it's going to have on...
Well, I'd like to say one thing, which is that, you know, there was a process, an attempt a number of years ago through what was called a Federal Violence Initiative, which attempted to identify within poor children a gene that predisposed them to violence. And it was the whole idea of seeing the kids inside the schools, because you can bet this isn't happening in certain parts of the country. It's happening in other parts. In poor communities, there's this militarization. There's this police. And it's tantamount to, you know, to occupation, to, you know, low-intensity detention, et cetera, et cetera. To take that one step further, Carolyn Maloney, who's our local congresswoman, just introduced a bill, and I guess we'll mention this a little bit later, but basically her bill, H.R. 3439, would make it legal for the Central Intelligence Agency to place CIA agents within local precincts around the country. So this process, this is what we've been focusing on, is continuing apace, and it has ramifications in the Spruill case. It has ramifications in what happened in Miami. We need to see this as a continuum, and various communities that are working on police issues begin to see these questions and ways in which we can delineate the problem and go about attacking it. We need to ban the use of these flashbangs. We need to demilitarize the police. We need to make it so that the police treat people, you know, give them their due rights, their right to dissent, their right to exist without being violated in their communities, and not see the people as the enemy.
Well, Frank Morales of the Campaign to Demilitarize the Police, we just do actually have a couple minutes left.
Okay.
So if in one of those minutes you can tell us about the bill in the House right now and events coming up that CDP is organizing.
Yeah, we're focusing. First of all, our web, if people want to reach us, can reach us at Demilitarize the Police, one long word, Demilitarize the Police, .netfirms, N-E-T-F as in Frank, I-R-M-S, netfirms.com, Demilitarize the Police, .netfirms.com, 212-969-8045. This bill, H.R. 3439, which would embed CIA operatives within domestic law enforcement, introduced by Carolyn Maloney this past November, we are going to have a protest at her office, which is on 92nd, 93rd Street and 3rd Avenue on January 20th. That's Tuesday, January 20th at noon. We'll have a protest there demanding that this bill be withdrawn. You know, the CIA has a long history of violating international law and human rights, et cetera, and we don't need to have CIA agents stationed within local precincts around this city or around the country.
Well, a couple wrap-up comments from our other guests. Juanita Nightingale on the phone from the Justice Coalition for Spruill and Zongo. Can you just one more time give the information about the forum coming up and what you'd like folks to do in their communities to address police violence?
We definitely would like them to come out to the forums. The first forum is going to be held January the 15th. From 6 to 9 p.m. at the Convent Avenue Baptist Church. It will be in the lecture hall, which is located at 420 West 145th Street, and it's accessible by bus and train. If there are any questions, you can call us. You'll get that at the end of the message. But we would like people to participate and groups to participate and then to take it back to their communities, their sphere of influence, and to help us make the community more powerful, because Alberta and Ousmane Zongo are just two of the most recent stolen lives, and we're tired of burying our families and friends that have been killed by the NYPD.
And we just have a few seconds left, but I assume that people of all ages, including high school students and young people, are welcome to come and participate?
Absolutely.
Well, we do have to wrap up this evening. We've been joined by Margaret Schaefer and Christian Covington of the Interfaith Coalition for Neighborhood Police Partnerships. We've been joined also in the studio by Frank Morales of the Campaign to Demilitarize the Police, and on the phone, Juanita Nightingale of the Justice Coalition for Alberta Sproul and Osmani Zongo. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
And you're listening to Rise Up Radio on WBAI 99.5 FM. That was a pre-recorded piece by our own Nell Geiser and Kat Aaron. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.